Blog Talk Radio.
And in those days, there were giants in the land, and the sons of the angels of God looked upon the daughters of men and found them fair, and took of them wives, and their sons became of old Greek men of renown. So they have been mixing with us on a genetic level since the time of Enoch and Ezekiel's will.
Here on Earth, we're intrigued by the sun, moon, and stars, and imagine there's got to be planets like ours. Some conceive of a face on the surface of Mars, so in need of a meaning and purpose we lost. That indeed they believe that these might be our gods, or that maybe with time we'll do right and evolve and eventually reach what they seek and then solve all the problems of man. But they really don't know that they fall in the works of our hands, all but just filthy rags. So we travel the lands to dig up our pastime, our lapses, and with it are much of the facts. Some imagine that God came in alien craft. They react in this way, they're so desperate for meaning and purpose. But satanic service, they know that they have evil motives. Am I making you nervous? Ha, I'm just scratching the surface. The signs from Ezekiel's wheel, when the skies unfold like scrolls and the breaking of seals. Heed the warning, the message is clear. Heed the warning, the time draws near. See the signs from Ezekiel's wheel, when the skies unfold like scrolls and the breaking of seals. Heed the warning, the message is clear. Heed the warning, the time draws near. In the blink of an eye, all believers will be raptured. Anyone left receives a mark or the caption. This leader will arise, claim his origins are alien, possessed by Satan on the side of the Nephilim. Profess those who left held us back from evolving, and now that they're gone, we'll solve all of Earth's problems. The worship of anyone God won't be halted. When evolving to gods and ourselves be exalted, we'll play on these lines, and in time they'll devise and arrive at a plan that will help hypnotize all the ones left behind, the spiritually blind. He's stolen their souls, now he's stealing their minds. It's already started, we're seeing the signs. Just study the word, prophecies all align. Now chop off the heads of all those who fight at one Earth, one world. Aren't you excited? The signs from Ezekiel's wheel, when the skies unfold like scrolls and the breaking of seals. Heed the warning, the message is clear. Heed the warning, the time draws near. See the signs from Ezekiel's wheel, when the skies unfold like scrolls and the breaking of seals. Heed the warning, the message is clear. Heed the warning, the time draws near. Where will you be in the year 2012? Are they casting a spell? They're not ready to tell. It's time to reveal what they tried to keep veiled. Pure evil they hail, and they sell it so well. He fell from the heavenly realms where he dwelled, a once beautiful angel that tried to rebel. Expelled from the light into darkness and hell, now a serpent and snake with reptilian scales. He wears a disguise with angelic wings and mimics the truth with a lie so obscene. He always repeats the same thing he told Eve, that you'll be supreme, a king or a queen, that you can evolve to an enlightened being, a god of your own that can do anything. He feeds on our souls with this fraudulent scheme in so many ways, but it's all just the same. See the signs from Ezekiel's wheel, when the skies unfold like scrolls and the breaking of seals. Heed the warning, the message is clear. Heed the warning, the time draws near. See the signs from Ezekiel's wheel, when the skies unfold like scrolls and the breaking of seals. Heed the warning, the message is clear. Heed the warning, the time draws near.
Why hide yourself with, you know, creating UFO crafts and things like that? Why that deception, if that's indeed what's going on?
The creatures figured out that there was one way that they could frighten mankind, and that is to present themselves as technologically superior beings, some physical UFOs.
Why would they want to abduct human beings?
UFO abduction might not be caused by physical occupants, but from creatures living in perhaps what we would call another dimension.
Mm-hmm. Posing as occupants.
Yes, the same type of interfering, harassing, paraphysical creature in every culture worldwide.
I've recently been forced to conceptualize the motion of conspiracy in such monumental proportion. It eclipses in its all-encompassing shadow all other mind-blowing, universe-altering revelations. as far as effectual truth and what they mean for world. Having studied astronomy as my science in college, I believe myself to have had better grasp of heavenly motion than most, and yet my knowledge on the interaction of the Earth with the other objects of our solar and universal system has been diffused in such way that I am left in quandary that makes me unable to entertain other focus. And though I am far from resolving its deeply profound riddle as possibility, it has nevertheless shattered my foundational truth, what I believe to be personal insight into astronomical mechanics, motion, formulation, structure, and construct of celestial entities comprising both planetary and star systems. Similar to the day after I awoke to the conspiracy of 9/11 and government-sponsored terror, I am now in need of model which would sufficiently replace, in explanation, my observation and imagination of how things daily unfold around me as world. Like my cats, when I move them to new residence, having disrupted all they knew as house and living space since their entrance into world as kittens, I too am exploring new boundary and limitation in hopes of making sense of the conundrum of who I am and where I am as self in world. Welcome, friends. I'm your host, Zen Garcia. This is Fallen Angels TV, and this is the second in the series that I'll be doing on the release of my next book, The Flat Earth as Key to Decrypt the Book of Enoch, which, interesting, I'll also share this with you. I did a show with Rob Skiba on Truth Frequency Radio just, I think it was 2 weeks ago on Wednesday. And for those that don't know, I did post a link to that show on my Facebook page. I've been informed that you might have to be a member of Truth Frequency Radio in order to be able to gain access to that show, but I was able to download it. And so at some point, I'm going to convert it into an actual video, and I'm also currently working on doing that with the first show that I did last week, but it takes me a little bit longer to do that, rather than, you know, throwing over a general overlay and creating into video so that I can upload it. I'm actually trying to make the pictures or the videos match with the content of the program. And so I'm going to post a link in the chat room to the show that I did with Rob, because I believe that it will bless a lot of you, those of you that are interested in this topic, as I know so many people are. But anyways, today will be a follow-up on that. And also, just wanted to let you know that after I did that show with Rob, the main file that I had for this particular text, and not saying that this is the reason why, but somehow it became corrupted. And so I had to go back and find an older file and connected to this, to that particular work, and then I had to salvage the work from that publish it again in a whole different text file and then work with it to reformat it so that I can make it configure with a whole different size of book. And so I had to reconfigure it to print and publish it as a 6x9, which is the size of the other books that I published, My Sons of God, Lucifer, Father of Cain, Skyfall, all of them are also 6x9 texts, which are, I guess, the most used size and format for publishing text. But I had wanted to publish this book on the flat earth in 8.5 by 11 inch format, which I felt like it would give you, you know, bigger pages, be easier to read, and I wanted to provide really larger photos so that you would be able to conceptualize what I was trying to explain in the text. But as I said, currently right now, that file is corrupted and I was not able to publish it in that way. And I had to, in fact, delete the whole book that I had available, completely deleted off of the system. And so I'm going to post a link to the current format, and this one is in 6x9. And you'll see that this one is 368 pages in this particular format, where it was 222 in the other size format. But anyways, this will also make it easier to make this text at some point available in hard copy as well, because I know a lot of people do prefer hard copy books for collecting. And I find that the hard copies are really spectacular too, as far as they're just like a more beautiful piece of work. And so anyways, I will check the chat room here in just a short bit, but I do want to get into some of what I'm going to be discussing in this particular show. The link, I did post a link to the book. It's available through Lulu right now. I would ask, even though it's mostly complete, there is one thing I want to add, and that I was going to add to the other file before it got corrupted. But, and so if people want to wait a week, that I'll be done with it then. And I'll also let you know, it might even take just a couple days, but this one particular piece I want to add is not included in this particular text. But if people are just eager, as I know many of you are, I've been receiving a lot of email from people, especially after hearing the show that I did with Rob. There's a lot of interest in this particular text, and people are wanting to get their hands on it even right now. And so I worked diligently today to get that done, to bring it to a point where I could offer it to you again. Because I had originally published it on Rosh Hashanah, which was the 15th, and that, you know, it got corrupted and the format got all messed up so that the chapters wouldn't align with the way that they were supposed to. And so, you know, none of the chapters were lining up with the page breaks as they were supposed to. And so, anyways, that one's all done. I've since deleted that file and made this one available. And so it is there It's 368 pages, and it's mostly completed. You might not even recognize. The one other thing that I wanted to add, just to let you know, is there's a particular passage in Isaiah where Isaiah talks about the sun going back 10 degrees and how that can only make sense if you apply it to the model of the earth, you know, as the flat circular plane for the heavenly luminaries, which revolve in rotation above it. Otherwise, you know, you can't make sense of that passage either. And so I'll be adding that at some point, but it is mostly complete. All right. And if you have commentary, if you want to bring something up or share, just post it in the chat room. I will try to get to that very soon, but I want to go ahead and get into some of this text. And specifically, I wanted to start today with a few of the numbers that, you know, the rate of speed, the rotational speed of the earth, because I think that the numbers that you find in the mathematics, which speak of the rotation of the earth as well as the sun in its moving around the Milky Way, and then also the Milky Way in its orbit around the you know, some grand universal center, that when you see the numbers which are associated to these particular postulations, it will also give you an idea as to the sinister forces aligned against this information and how they're trying to keep, for whatever reason, knowledge of the real shape of the earth from the masses of humanity. And it's my opinion that they are specifically trying to do that in order to demote the earth as being the focus of the Creator's grand design of the universal system, and that creating and fostering belief in the heliocentric model of the world, it makes the sun the predominant entity of the quote-unquote solar system, and that it makes the sun the focus of this system, and it makes the earth and all the other planets just minor subjects to its grand immensity. And so, and that also has in part to do with the sun worship, because the Masons are sun worshipers. They believe that Lucifer is the sun god, and Helios, Sol, whatever name you want to give to him, Lucifer the light bringer, that he is equated to being the sun god. And as the sun god, it is in his effort to be like the Most High, it's a way of exalting himself above the throne of God, above, you know, to steal and divert worship of the Most High to himself. And so that's, in my opinion, one of the reasons why the heliocentric model is perpetuated, and why the Masons of the world, even though they know the truth and they fly it on the United Nations flag, they show and depict the flat earth in you know, the way that the continents circle around the polar north, the North Pole as the center of this, what's called the azimuthal equidistant projection map, that the true configuration of the Earth is how it is depicted in the United Nations flag, and also as emblem over the conference room where they have all of their large meetings and gatherings, and the speeches that are given to the United Nations Assembly, that this flat Earth logo, this emblem, is embedded there on the wood paneling of the wall in that conference room, just as it is depicted on the flag that is hoisted in front and above the United Nations as seat of world government. And so it's also my opinion that they're depicting it this way, and they're flying this banner in this way. It's a way of their, it's a way of them declaring victory over the world and proving to the different secret society, the members that are affiliated with their groups worldwide, it's their way of showing that they, in fact, have control over and are have succeeded in bringing forth Pike's vision. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, the Pike spoke of the need to foment three global wars in order to orchestrate bringing forth world government, and that they could establish global dominance through the Illuminist secret society groups by doing so. And that's exactly what they did. They brought forth the League of Nations, even though it failed. The United Nations was established after the Second World War, and that is the seat of global government. And that is the organization which the world looks to in trying to work out or to speak of international affairs. And so, let's look at some of these numbers. And I'm going to be reading from, this will be specific from chapter 23 of my book, the chapter that, entitled, Is the Earth Really Moving? It says this. Science claims that the Earth is spinning at a rate of 1,037,541,666,666,667 miles per hour at the equator, which can be calculated by dividing the circumference of the Earth at the equator, which is about 24,901 miles, or 40,070 kilometers, you know, which is the circumference, the diameter at the equator, by the number of hours in a day. So you take the 24,901, divide it by 24, and you get this 1,037,541,666,667 mile per hour number, which you see, you know, you have all these sixes. We know that 666, that's the number of the beast. And so this is just one of those numbers which gives you an intriguing insight into the powers, the forces, the rulers of darkness, the principalities, the wickedness in high places, which are perpetuating belief in a heliocentric solar system, with the sun being the foremost entity of this system, and that the Earth is just one of its 9 planetary subjects. All right, here's another number. When one converts its orbital speed around the sun at a rate of 18.5 miles a second, or 30 kilometers a second, that equals to 18.5 times 60 times 60, which equals 66,600 miles per hour. And so science says that, you know, the Earth is spinning at this 66,600 mile per hour rate, which again, you get that 666 number. Going to read just a little bit more of this chapter. Does not the rate of the Earth's span and its orbital speed around the sun not hint at the sinister nature of the forces aligned against the flat Earth as revelation? Or is the fact that both of those numbers contain 666 as part of their number sequence, is that just merely coincidence? If you really do believe that this is coincidence, consider this also. When one subtracts the supposed inclination of the Earth from 90 degrees, which is its measure if it were perfectly aligned vertically, 90 degrees minus 23.4 degrees, which is the supposed incline of the Earth, you get 66.6 degrees. Coincidence? I think not. And so, here again, there's more 666 sequential numbers in the mathematics that you find in, like, the distance of Alpha Centauri from the Earth. There's 666 number sequence in that as well. But, I mean, isn't it obvious that these numbers are trying to tell you something, in my opinion? All right, just a little bit more. Science claims that the Milky Way galaxy is approximately 80 to 120,000 light years across, less than 7,000 light years thick, and that our solar system is situated near the edge of one of its spiraling arms, 26,000 light years from the galactic center. Because of this immense size, the solar system is said to be orbiting around the center of the galaxy at a velocity of approximately 155 miles a second, or 250 kilometers a second, which as speed equals to 558,000 miles per hour, or 900,000 kilometers an hour, and that it takes approximately 200 to 250 million years to complete one orbit around this grand galactic center. It is said also that the Milky Way itself is orbiting around some grand universal center at an astounding 372.823 miles a second, or 600 kilometers a second, which is about 1,342,162.8 miles per hour, or 2,160,000 kilometers an hour. And so this is all the numbers that science says that, you know, the Earth is moving and the sun is moving, that we're moving through the universe at these just incredible rates of speed. With the compounding effect of all these mind-blowing speeds coming together Isn't it a wonder that one can stand outside on any given day and not feel the slightest exertion of breeze? That there are numerous days when the flag in my front yard wavers not in the least bit, and that the wind is often so slight or non-existent that it won't even tussle one's hair. Here's one final quote in regard to this. These measurements, confirmed by the Cosmic Background Explorer satellite in 1989 and 1990, suggest that our galaxy and its neighbors, the so-called local group, are moving at 600 kilometers per second, 1.34 million miles per hour, in the direction of the constellation Hydra. All right, and so, you know, again, you have science saying that we're moving at all of these incredible rates of speed, that the Earth is moving around the Sun and that the Sun is moving around the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and that the Milky Way as a whole, as a galactic group, that we're moving around some grand universal center, that, you know, whether black hole, whatever they declare it to be, that all we're all moving together at these incredible rates of speed. And yet, as I said, you can go out on some days and there's not even enough wind to tussle your hair. I mean, wouldn't you think that if the Earth were spinning at such incredible rate of speed that you would feel the wind? And I know a lot of people that deny the flat Earth. They say that the atmosphere is moving with the Earth. But if that were true, how is it that the planes are able to propel themselves through the atmosphere, and how is it that they would, you know, be able to get to any destination if the Earth were spinning at such a high rate of speed with it? Which, if you think about that also, if the Earth is moving at this 1,000 miles per hour at the equator, how is it that any pilot is able to land any airplane safely? I mean, you would think that there would be just innumerous amounts of crashes, so much so that we would see airplane crashes depicted every day in the news. And that crashes would be so predominant, and flight, airline flights so risky that it, you know, there would not even be travel in that manner. That the, you know, the, and pilots wouldn't even, wouldn't have even survived their training in order to be able to become, you know, licensed airline pilots and to have that kind of career. Most of them would be dead, would never ever even be able to accomplish becoming career pilots. And proof that the Earth does not move, I'm going to refer to a couple of passages, a few scriptures, because our observations, what we see of the world, lets us know that the Earth is stationary, that we're not moving at 1,000 miles an hour as science claims that we are, that the Earth is flat, it's immobile, fixed, unmoving, and stationary. And as I said, the biblical scriptures confirm it as such. And here's just a few passages. And then I'm going to go into, again, the some of the work, that, you know, as far as my book, even though this is all in my book as well, but specific to the Book of Enoch, the descriptions of the motions of the sun and the moon. From 1 Chronicles chapter 16, verse 30, it says, "Fear before him all the earth, the world also shall be stable, that it be not moved. The Lord reigneth," this is from Psalms 93:1. "The Lord reigneth, he is clothed with majesty. The Lord is clothed with strength, wherewith he hath girded himself. The world also is established, that it cannot be moved." From Psalm 96:10. "Say among the heathen that the Lord reigneth, the world also shall be established, that it shall not be moved. He shall judge the people righteously." Psalm 104, verse 5. Well, verse 1 through 5. "Bless the Lord, O my soul, O Lord my God, thou art very great, thou art clothed with honor and majesty. Who coverest thyself with light as with a garment? Who stretcheth out the heavens like a curtain? Who layeth the beams of the chambers in the waters? Who maketh the clouds his chariot? Who walketh upon the wings of the wind? Who maketh his angels spirits? His ministers of flaming fire, who laid the foundations of the earth, that it should not be removed forever." Isaiah 45:18. "For thus saith the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it, he hath established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord, and there is none else." And so when you look up the word established or established in the Strong's, you get this. The Hebrew word is kun, K-U-W-N, which means a primitive root, properly to be erect, stand perpendicular, hence causatively to set up in a great variety of applications, whether literal, establish, fix, prepare, apply, or figuratively, appoint, render, sure, proper, or prosperous. Certain, confirm, direct, faithfulness, fashion, fasten, firm, be fitted, be fixed, framed, be meet, ordain, order, perfect, make preparation, prepare, provide, make provision, to be, make ready, right, set aright, fast forth, to be stable, established, stand, terry, and very deed, which, again, all of these translations mean that the earth, and here's the outline of the biblical usage, just to give you a little bit greater detail. It means to be set up, to be established, to be fixed, to be firmly established, to be established, be stable, be secure, be enduring, to be fixed, be securely determined, to be direct aright, be fixed aright, be steadfast, to prepare, be ready, be prepared, be arranged, be settled, to establish, set up, accomplish, do, make firm, to fix, make ready, prepare, provide, provide for, furnish, to direct toward, to arrange, order, to be established, be fastened, be prepared, be ready, set up, establish, constitute, make, to fix, to direct. To be established, to be prepared, to be established, or to be restored. So all of these definitions let you know that the earth is established in fixed order, that there's no movement to it. All right. Just a couple. Chapter 24 is visible proofs of a stationary earth. And I talked about in this about how when you take a cannon and you shoot it in any direction, north, west, east, or south, that the cannonball will travel a certain distance, and that distance is equal in all directions, and that if the earth were moving, then its shot would deviate towards the east. Like, for instance, if you were shooting in north, the cannon fire should move towards the west as the earth were moving in rotation towards the east, but you do not see it in that. It does not deviate in any manner, no matter which direction you shoot it. Same thing for, as I said, I mentioned a plane. That when a plane, which averages about 500 miles an hour, when you lift off from one airport and you travel, it doesn't matter east, west, north, south, if you travel about 500 miles, you're going to end up about 500 miles away. I know that there's a difference in wind speed and you have to adjust for time zones, but that when you fly in any direction, you're going to end up about 500 miles away in about an hour, because that's about the average speed of a commercial flight. But if the earth were moving and you were flying to the east, the commercial airliner would actually lose ground because the earth is supposedly moving at twice the rate of an airplane, of an airliner. And if you were flying to the north, your destination would be moving to the east, so you would actually have to fly towards the northeast in order to get to a northerly direction. Same thing for the south. If you were flying south, you would have to fly southeast in order to get to your destination. Now, if you were flying west, then the earth should be rotating your destination towards you so that you should arrive there at a lot quicker pace. But this is not the case. And again, as I said, can you imagine the kind of nightmare it would be for pilots to try to land a plane while the runway were moving on the earth at this supposed 1,037 mile rotational speed? It does not make sense. Same thing for a hot air balloonist or a parachutist. When a hot air balloonist, when they leave the ground, the earth is not moving quickly away from them, that they stay in a fixed orientation above it. Same thing for a parachutist. When they jump out of an airplane, they float down to the ground and the earth is not moving at a rapid pace away from them towards the east. So these kind of things are all confirmation that the earth is unmoving, that, you know, there's no deviation to its supposed rotational speed, which if there's no rotational speed and the earth is not moving, then there's no possible way that the earth is a spherical planet and that we're in orbit around the sun. All right. Now, I've already covered many times the curvature, how there's, you know, there's no measurable curvature to the Earth, and that if there were curvature and the Earth were a sphere, a ball-like sphere, then we should not be able to see at great distance, like the cityscape, the Manhattan skyline, the Statue of Liberty at a distance, or even lighthouses, that they should be below the level of the horizon, especially after 10 or so miles, that they should be so far below the horizon that you would not be able to see them. But again, this is not the case. And the fact that when you go out and watch a sunset on water and you see a pillar of light all the way from the sun to your feet, proof that the Earth between where the sun is to all the way to where you are on the beach watching the sun set, that the Earth is completely flat between both points, and that there is no curvature. Because if there were curvature, the light would never reach you in an unbroken fashion. All right, I'm going to go ahead and let me check the chat room here real quick. I'm trying to catch some of the commentary. I'll tell you what I will do is I will read, I'll save all the commentary and then I'll read it in the next show and then answer your questions, because it's scrolling too fast for me to be able to read it. What I'll do is I'll copy it all right now. And paste it and check it out here in just a short bit. And then if I see something, I will answer it. All right. And then I'll go ahead and get into some of this other material. But I will try to get to that and give you proper. Okay, thank you, Watcher Ruth. I appreciate that. She said there were no questions, just commentary. All right, which I'm glad that y'all are sharing dialogue. I think all that is very important. All right, so let me get into some of the motions of the moon. Because I had already talked about how the sun goes through the six gates of heaven. And I explained that in the first part last week. And so if you missed that part of the show, go and check it out. And as I said, I will be making a video, especially now that I'm done with the main bulk of the work with this particular book, that it is now available, and I gave you the link to that. I'll have more time to work on those kind of things. And so I do plan on converting into video form those three videos. This one that I'm doing today, the one that I did last week, and the show that I did with Rob. And I do believe that Rob will at some point, because he always does a really awesome job on converting his shows into videos, and hopefully he'll do that and release that show on his YouTube channel as well. All right, so we're going to pick up here with this will be chapter 21 of my book. It's on the lesser luminary. I'll read some of the passage from the Book of Enoch and then explain this portion of the text as well, which will be really what I wanted to cover in this part. And probably next week I'll do a follow-up, because there's a lot in the description of the Book of Enoch on the motions of the moon. Those are the two main portions of the book on the courses of the heavenly luminaries found in the Book of Enoch, which focus on the motions of the sun and the moon. Says this: the lengthening of the day and night and the contraction of the day and night are made to differ from each other by the progress of the sun. By means of this progress, the day is daily lengthened and the night greatly shortened. Hold on 1 second. This is the law and progress of the sun, and its turning when it turns back, turning during 60 days, and going forth. This is the great everlasting luminary, that which he names the sun forever and ever. This is also is that which goes forth, a great luminary, and which is named after its peculiar kind, as God commanded. And thus it goes in and out, neither slackening nor resting, but running on its chariot by day and by night. It shines with a seventh portion of light from the moon, but the dimensions of both are equal. All right, this is a very interesting part. Because according to Enoch, he describes the great luminary and the lesser luminary, which is the moon, the great luminary being the sun, he says that they are of the same size. Which we know that according to science, that the proportions of the sun and moon are completely different. That the sun is cited as being massive in comparison to the earth and to the moon, which let me see if I can pull that up real quick. But I have those proportions cited, and so let me read this real quick. Well, anyways, I'm going to read this really quick. Science claims that the sun is 92,960,000 miles away from the earth, and being a nearly perfect sphere, has a mean radius of about 432,450 miles. A diameter of 864,938 miles, and a circumference of 2,713,406 miles. This means that, according to the measurements of the Earth, the proportions of the Sun and the Moon and the Earth, that 109 Earths could fit side by side across the breadth of its width. And being a star, the sun is said to be the center of the planetary system, which orbits around it, and predominant entity containing 99.86% of the entire mass of the solar system, weighing about 333,000 times as much as that of the Earth. In the heliocentric model, 1,300,000 Earths are said to be able to fit inside the Sun, with the Earth being about proportional to the average size of a sunspot. And whereas the Earth had always been defined in spherical terms, the latest finding and claim is that the Earth is not even spherical, but is pear-shaped. I don't know if you've heard this, but this is the latest report. Neil deGrasse Tyson, the astrophysicist of world renown, he claims this: the Earth is not only oblate, wider at the equator than pole to pole, but pear-shaped, slightly wider just south of the equator. So they're saying, because of the rotational speed of the Earth, that the Earth is not a sphere, but is pear-shaped. Which, how does that work into all of the NASA photographs of the Earth being round, when we know all of those are computer-generated images as well? All right. The mean radius of the Earth is said to be about 3,959 miles. Its equatorial distance, 7,926 miles across. And its circumference at the equator, 24,902 miles, or 901 miles. The moon is said to be about a quarter size of the Earth, having a radius of 1,079.6 miles, a diameter of 2,159.2 miles, and an equatorial circumference of 6,783.5 miles. And so you see, the moon is a quarter size of the Earth, and the Earth is supposed to be so small that 109 Earths could fit across the diameter of the Sun. And that, of course, the Sun is supposed to be of such immense size that it, is much larger than the Earth or any other of the planetary bodies found in our solar system. And that the Earth is, not even as big as Jupiter or Uranus or Saturn, that all of these gaseous planets, they're all said to be very much larger than the Earth, and that the Earth, but that the Earth is the largest of the inner planets, those that are rocky, hard, Mercury, Venus, Mars, that the Earth is the largest of those inner planets. But Enoch says that the Sun and the Moon are of the same dimension, the same size. If we see, when we see the eclipse of the Sun happen and the Moon go in front of it, that they absolutely appear to be the same size, because the Moon fits exactly so that it blocks out all of the Sun's rays, except for those rays which are, that extend past the body of the Moon. And so, according to the solar eclipse, the Moon and the Sun appear to have the same dimension. But science says this about the appearance of the solar eclipse, it says, science claims that they have this appearance because the sun is about 400 times larger than the moon, while at the same time being 400 times farther away. Thus, they look as if they are about the same size, but this is merely an illusion. Because, of course, the sun is 92,960,000 miles away from the Earth. And that, you know, the moon is only much closer to the Earth than the sun, which, as I explained in on the show that I did with Rob, when you see the sun going down in the clouds, setting in the clouds at sunset, you see from where it's embedded in the clouds, its central location, you see the sunlight fanning out in all directions, which absolutely means that the sun has to be much closer to the Earth than this grand 92 million mile distance. Because if it were 92 million miles away and, you know, 109 Earths, the size of 109 Earths across its diameter, all of these sun's rays would hit the Earth parallel to one another. There would not be any kind of difference in angle as we can see during the sunset. And that, according to the description of Enoch in his description of its movement back and forth through the six gates of heaven, which are spread from the Tropic of Capricorn to the Tropic of Cancer, that the sun has to be smaller than the width of that distance, which, if you measure the distance from one tropic to the other, you discover that there's 43 or 46 degrees distance, because the Tropic of Cancer is located at 3 degrees north latitude, and the Tropic of Capricorn is located at 23 degrees south latitude, and that when you add these two 23 degrees together, you get 46 degrees, and that the measure of distance for every 1 degree equals to about 69 miles. And so the number you come up with when you add that together is 3,174 mile distance is the distance between the two tropics. And so Enoch's description of the sun moving over a six-month period in slow rotation, climbing and ascending and descending between these two points, because we know that the summer solstice is when happens when the sun is directly above the Tropic of Cancer, and the winter solstice when it is directly above the Tropic of Capricorn, it cannot be wider than this area. And so the sun has to be much smaller than this 3,174 mile expanse, which means the sun is very small, even though it's very bright and luminous. I believe it was Samuel Robotham, the author of The Earth Not a Globe, Zetetic Astronomy. I believe in that book or somewhere he was able to calculate with a sextant the distance of the sun, as well as how big the sun was. And if I'm correct, the measure for both the sun and the moon was a distance of 32 miles across, and that they are 3,100 miles away from the Earth being in fixed altitude above it, which these proportions are much smaller than what science has us believing in embracing the heliocentric model. And I know that when I first heard what I just told you, that it absolutely seemed preposterous to me that, you know, the Earth, the sun and the moon being only 32 miles across. I mean, how is that possible? According to science, it isn't. But again, when you look at what is being relayed in the Book of Enoch, he absolutely asserts, I'll get to that here in just a second, watch Ruth. He absolutely asserts that the sun and the moon are of the same size. They have the same dimension. And not only, you know, some people would say that Enoch 71:47, where he describes them as having the same dimension, that maybe this was a misprint or a mistranslation. But Enoch repeats the same thing in Enoch 77:3. He says, "These are the two great luminaries whose orbs are as the orbs of heaven, and the dimensions of both are equal." And so Enoch references that the sun and the moon are of the same size twice, so as to be confirming witness for one another. All right, let me answer this question that from Ruth. And I'm checking out the chat now too. All right, hold on. I'm trying to. There's a lot of conversation, so I'm trying to keep up with it. Hold on. Oh, my goodness. One second. Because I have to copy it and then paste it into the text because it's so small in the chat room. All right. Ruth was asking me about how does the hollow earth work into this model. And it still does. It still works into, if the earth is flat, it still works as far as the earth being hollow, because it speaks of Sheol being in the center of the earth. And so, because we know that, you know, can't remember the explorer, Admiral Byrd, we know that he cites an account of having gone into the interior at the North Pole. And so that, I still absolutely believe that there is a North Polar opening. And because it's also mentioned in the Cave of Treasures that the giants were locked into the interior of the Hollow Earth by Alexander. If you don't know what I'm referencing, I've read that on several passages, several shows as well. The Cave of Treasures is the text that you can go and read that particular. It describes 32 different giant tribes being locked into the interior of the earth. And so it's my opinion that it still fits. All of this still fits. Except that there is no south polar opening, because the earth is not a globe. And the south pole, what we would consider the south pole or the Antarctic continent, that is actually the wall, the outer edges, the extremity, the ends of the earth, which are also described in the scriptures. They speak of the ends of the earth. And just like with what I referenced with Nebuchadnezzar's dream of seeing a tree growing up in the midst of the earth and being able to see, be seen from every part of the earth. Same thing with Yeshua being taken up by Satan to an exceedingly high mountain and shown all the kingdoms of the earth. Same thing. And also when he returns for his second coming, how every eye shall be witness, shall see him, that he will, his second coming with the saints will be like lightning extending from all the way from the east to the west, and that every eye will witness his return. On a globe, this cannot be true, but on a flat earth plane that is encompassed, enclosed by the firmament, all of that then makes sense. All right, I'm not going to get into the semantics of whether, because there's, you know, dialogue in the chat room about the Bible being the work of man, or that it's been mistranslated. I'm not going to get into those semantics, because I know that the Bible, as it stands, the King James Version of the Bible, that it is confirmation of it being divinely inspired, because not only of the work of Ivan Panin, who shows that there is a mathematical equation that confirms that the texts, as they are formulated and as they have been brought together, that they could only, this mathematical code shows a divinity to the authorship. And also the Bible codes, the fact that there is this Bible code encoded over these texts that have been encrypted into them thousands of years before computers became available to search out and to locate these equal distance letter sequences, absolutely confirms that the Bible is an inspired text. And you can't just search out Bible codes in any other text and have it be, because they're prophetic. The Bible codes have a predictive, prophetic capacity to them, which again verifies their being divinely inspired, and that the Creator had to have masterminded them for his purpose. Otherwise, they just could not exist. Okay, there's a question about the comets and asteroids under the firmament. And I've been thinking about this too, because many of you have read my book, Sons of God, where I talk about the destroyer and Nibiru being, you know, this other planet and this supposed planet X. How does that figure into the model of the world if the Earth is the center of the universe and all of the other planets, and even the sun and the moon, if they're, you know, of such small size, how is it that the comets and asteroids, where did they come from and how do they figure in? And so it's still my opinion that that the description of, you know, of the hammered bracelet or what is the asteroid belt, that came about as some ancient cataclysm, and that the comets and even the debris field that we see in the solar system, and when I say solar system, I'm excluding the Earth, because we know that the Earth is the foundation for the heavenly luminaries, and that the sun and the moon and the other planets, even though they're not of large proportion and certainly not of larger proportion than the Earth, they still have substance, in my opinion. And so there's still some kind of interplay occurring in the heavens. It's just not to the grand size that we have been led to believe in by NASA and by the heliocentric worldview. And it's still my opinion that Nibiru, or the destroyer, or what the Hopis call the red and blue star Kachina, that they are still utilized by the Most High God and will be utilized to bring judgment to the earth and to those that are not written into the Book of Life, and that they have part to play in the end of days. And so, yeah, I'm trying to get to the questions, Joe, so just give me a minute here. All right, and so it's my opinion that even what the Colbran Bible describes as the destroyer, what the Hopi prophecies reference as the purifier, that they are some kind of heavenly body which is utilized by the Most High God as to bring punishment or to bring judgment to the earth and the inhabitants of it. And that it's not, again, this is my opinion, that they're not of larger stature or larger size than the earth, but that, you know, they're very well could be bodies and entities which we do not see reflected in the firmament. And if we are in enclosed space, you know, like as described in Isaiah chapter 40, with the earth being the circle of the earth being the floor for what is the tabernacle or the tent, and that the heavens are spread as a curtain above the earth, if we are this enclosed canopy, dome-like structure, can and does the Most High allow outside entities, outside bodies to enter into? I mean, does he bring asteroids and comets from outside of this enclosure and allow them to somehow get inside of it? Because there's some speculation that there's, you know, a glass ceiling, or there's some protective layer which doesn't allow, you know, outside bodies to enter into the firmament. I don't know. I don't have the answers for that. It's very interesting to consider. But, you know, again, there's speculation that the early trials that when NASA and the global elite discovered that there was this glass ceiling or that there was this protective barrier, that they started sending up these nuclear bombs and exploding them in you know, in the heavens, that they were trying to break through. Who knows? I don't know. These are still things that I am working out, that I'm trying to get idea about. I mean, there's a lot of very difficult questions. Post them in the chat room. I'm trying to get to them. I'm going through the scroll now. All right, let me see. Let me see if this individual wanted to. All right, area code 205, did you have a question or comment? Okay, I'm guessing you're just listening. All right, let me check this other. Area code 336, did you have a question or a comment?
Well, yeah, that's me, Joseph Gibson. I'm calling from Reidsville, North Carolina, and I'm in your chat room typing many questions, and nobody in there. I don't know if they're supporters of your show or if they're just people that are just agitators. However, they did tell me to press 1, and I've been waiting for 45 minutes to ask you several questions. First, I'd like to know, what is your educational background on these types of topics and theology and world history? Because you quoted several things where I cannot find any type of factual foundation to your belief or what you're talking about. I mean, if you're just discussing opinions, then I can respect that. But I have a master's degree in theology and world history, and whatever you have stated tonight about Scientology and all these other subjects, I do not find any type of foundation in my Bible or other Bibles.
Nobody's said anything about Scientology, and what are you referencing specifically?
Well, you stated that, for instance, the King James Bible is what? Only written by inspiration. Well, if you're just trying to disprove or put down people who have faith and believe that the Bible was inspired by God himself, then I don't think that is the right stance to take because you have no facts to back it up. The Textus Receptus manuscripts are the oldest manuscripts that do coincide with the seventh translation of the King James Bible. And all prophecy leads to the book of Daniel, where he states that the seventh, even in the book of Psalms, where the seventh translation would be in English, okay, and that was the King James Bible.
Hold on, I'm not going to argue with you on a bunch of this stuff because we've only got 8 minutes, but all I said was that the work of Ivan Panin verifies that the King James Version of the Bible is inspired, and that the Bible codes, because they also work and are discovered on the King James Version of the Bible, that is also verification of their being inspired.
Okay, I'll respect that, but where, like for instance, the latest finding by archaeology, even science, what about the Dead Sea Scrolls that even coincide with the Textus Receptus manuscript? I mean, so, you know, these books that you're saying were not put in the Bible, that belong in the Bible, you know, coincide and are friendly to the Mormons and these other cults that are, you know, promoting and downgrading the rightfully dividing Christian out there who is an independent Bible believer. And that's the threat to these cults today. Now, I don't understand. What is really your belief personally? I mean, because I didn't get it throughout your – I listened to your entire show. What is your real – because you went all over the place with what you were talking about. And I couldn't really make sense of it. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I couldn't pinpoint, like, what is your belief as an individual and person on Earth today? I don't understand.
Well, I'm a believer in the Most High God, and I'm a believer in Yeshua as Savior Messiah, and I believe the King James Version of the Bible is an inspired text, and that there's much to learn, and I also believe that the Book of Enoch is inspired, and that it teaches us a lot of things that are not well received or accepted, like the flat earth and that the Earth is not spinning as a planet and it's not part of a solar system, that it's fixed, it's firm, it's immovable, and it was established as foundation for the heavens that were spread out as curtain above it, just like it says in the Word.
Okay, you answered my question respectfully, and at the same time, like I said, I have a master's degree in theology. I've studied cults and what you believe, and the Book of Mormon, the Jehovah's Witness, all of them, okay? And it's hard in 8 minutes to a theological debate going because I waited for 45 minutes to be put through. So would you like to have me back where I can bring my facts and you can compare your facts and we can have an honest theological debate about what you are preaching here? Because I believe what you're saying, and no disrespect, I believe it's garbage. And you're fermenting people's minds, and I don't like that. I don't like that as an honest person.
You're totally entitled to your opinion, but no, I don't think I'm going to get into a semantic debate with you on what you think that I'm teaching is garbage. Why would I even, if you don't want to listen, fine, don't. But other
respect
and honor
no.
what I'm bringing forth, and they appreciate it. And if you don't, that's fine.
I respect that. All I'm asking you to do is prove what you are talking about. Like, for instance, when I went to Yale University.
I do prove what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you gave me YouTube links created by people that are with IP addresses that go to GoDaddy. I looked them up and researched them. I went to Yale University, okay, for 7 years. I can back up and give you actual documentation of what I'm talking about.
Does that make you some kind of authority? Because
I asked you for your educational
background.
I asked you for your educational background. You haven't given it to me yet. Where have you gone to school? What have you studied that makes you a professional?
Oh, so you think that just because you go to school and you have some paperback degree that makes you some authority on the Word of God? Look at how many PhD degrees buy into the Earth as being a planet, and how many of them believe that we evolved of apes, and they're supposed to be some kind of authority? So
I'm not trying to put you down. I'm asking you, what educational background do you have?
That's exactly what you're trying to say. I went
to
Yale,
I got
a master's, and who are you, and what kind of education do you have? Come on, man.
Well, you're giving me a worldly, independent belief and a liberal belief. What I'm trying to do is put you on the spot and say, hey, what have you studied that makes you an authority on this subject? Where have you been?
I've studied a lot of things. I've written 9 books about it.
Nothing.
Why don't you read some of those and maybe formulate an opinion from some of my research instead of just coming on and judging me over an hour and a half?
I have not judged you. I have not judged you, and I'm not trying to put on a show for anyone. I stumbled across your show and was listening, and when people talk about spirituality, world history, and scientific facts, and they're trying to put their opinion and apply it as factual foundation to our way of believing every day, I take offense to that because that's not the truth.
Well, maybe you should study some of my books or listen to some of my other shows before formulating your opinion and having some kind of judgmental bias. Anyway,
I don't have judgmental bias.
At the end of the show.
I don't have judgmental bias, sir, and if you don't want me on your show, I'll invite you onto my show. And you can bring whoever you want, and I'll put together a panel, and you can prove me wrong and make me look like an idiot on my show. I'll challenge you right now
you've
on your show.
You've already got some bias.
8 minutes.
Why would I
8 minutes.
Come
8 minutes.
On.
You've given me 8 minutes.
I don't argue with you on all this.
You gave me 8 minutes to state my facts. How can I state all my facts in 8 minutes while arguing with people in your chat room at the same time? I'm asking you to stand up for what you believe in. I'm asking you as a man, as a human being, to stand up for what you believe in.
I stand up for what I believe in, and that's why I do the work that I do. And people like you that disagree with me, that's fine. You can have your own opinion and your own disagreement. I respect you for where you are, but just because you have some Yale degree or some paperback degree doesn't make you an authority on God's word.
I believe it does, because I put a lot of hard work into real research and a lot of hard work into writings and teachings and listening to a lot of people over the years. I believe
okay,
that does
yeah.
account for
just
something.
Like all the people that go to seminary and that learn and are taught and indoctrinated into only what is accepted to be taught in seminary, they don't even know anything about the Nephilim or the giants or any of the other things which are the secrets that are contained within the gospel. You only learn and know and accept what they allow and want you to know and teach. Same thing with all the educational systems where they teach about that we evolved of monkeys and that Darwinism is, you know, the scientific belief that everybody is supposed to buy into and that we...
I don't believe in Darwinism at all. No, I don't buy into Darwinism at all, because if he had the technology and scientific information, he would never have written the book that he did and the books he did. Actually, Darwin was he was an accountant. He knew nothing about science. But anyway, I don't want to waste time getting into that. What I'm trying to ask you is, look, I'm not disrespecting you, and I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just asking you, on an educational standpoint, on your show, to come out. If you don't want me on yours, okay, I'm inviting you to mine. Let's bring your side of the story and facts and your educational background and bring it and compare it to mine. And let's see where the truth lies. Isn't that what it's all about in the world? Are you just automatically correct and that's the way it's got to be?
I don't even know who you are. I don't even know what show
you
do. I don't even know what your belief system is. But if you are just trying to invite me on so you can try to prove me wrong and you correct...
I told you why I wanted you on.
Back to Greece. I don't have no interest in that. I don't have to...
I told you why I wanted you on. I told
anybody.
You. I just told you, from a man to man and a human being to a human being and one belief to another, to bring your educational expertise onto my show, and I will bring you my paper degree like you insulted me, and let's have a normal conversation, and let's see who can prove who wrong. Because I know for a fact, through my historical notes and research, I can honestly say...
I don't have
say,
no interest in it. I don't even want to...
Because you don't want to be proved wrong. You don't want to be proved wrong, sir. Fact.
No,
that's fact.
Not the truth at all. I just don't want to... have to come on to try to prove myself on somebody's
I'm not saying,
program.
What did I just say?
I know what I've done, and I look, brother. I'm going to just let
you
go because there's no point and no need in continuing this. And I don't
yeah, that's
feel
right.
like
cut
I
me
have
off.
To
that's right.
Confirm
cut me off.
Myself.
Discredit me. That's right. Cut me off. Discredit me because you have no answers for me. You've not answered one question I've asked you tonight. You are a
okay.
phony, sir.
Whatever, brother.
You're a phony. You're a phony. You're
yeah.
phony. You are.
Right.
You know it. That's why you're cutting me off. That's right? Right? Am I right or wrong?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, brother. I apologize, people. This is just another one of those trolls that tries to come on and, you know, disrupt the program. And he did succeed in doing that. And I apologize that I had to... you know, allow him to come on for that long and disrupt the program for 20 minutes. And I'll pick up next week and we'll try to cover some more of this information and to help you to understand this as far as the Book of Enoch and its connections to the flat earth. Once again, God bless all. I pray that the Most High lead you in discernment and lead you in, you know, discovering the truth that not a lot of people really know about or cover, and that's why, you know, you come and listen to the shows that I do. I don't claim to be any great authority. I don't claim to have PhD degrees. I've only been, you know, I went to college at Mercer University, got my bachelor's, but I've studied 30 years. Studying scriptures, studying and reading things that most other people don't read, haven't heard about, and never looked into. And I believe that the Most High has given me an eye to understand things in a different way, certainly in a way that has not been taught by mainstream churchianity, and certainly not in a way that they teach in the seminaries, and that, you know, that gives me an insight and a perspective on truth that is completely different than what most people know about or embrace. And I know that a lot of you appreciate that, and that's one of the reasons why you come to my show, is because I'm not trying to rehash all the regular, normal stuff that they teach you. That if you wanted that, you would go to, you know, these mainstream churches, and that you would, because you already get enough of that. There's so much of that out there, and yet when you go to them and ask them for real answers on the Nephilim, giants, or Cain being a child of the serpent, or preexistence and predestination, that they can't give you answers on these kind of topics or these kind of questions. And yeah, I know that according to, you know, mainstream churches or to most pastors and preachers, that this isn't the truth. To them, at least, it isn't the truth. But, you know, they'll never step out of the box, never step out of what they already think they know to learn anything different or to look at things with a new perspective. And so, and I've dealt with so much of that. Many of you know how much I've been attacked over the years by people that have the same mindset as this gentleman who wants to do nothing but argue with me. And I don't have to do that anymore. I don't feel any need to enter into that kind of arena or to expose myself to that. I've already done enough of that. I've done many shows with many people that disagree with me. I've got nothing to prove. My work stands for itself. I've published 9 books on all of my beliefs, and I've backed them up with scripture. I've backed them up on and made all of this work freely available on YouTube. I've given my books away for free. I'm not out here trying to make money on all this stuff. I'm out here trying to share with you insight into the scriptures, into the word, which you won't get from most others. Yeah, according to 90% of churchianity out there, I'm wrong, and they're right. But that doesn't mean that they are truly correct. Anyways, God bless all of you. Thank you for hanging in there with me. And again, I apologize for not being able to continue on with the information. And I will do so next week. We'll pick it up then. God bless all. Good night.